afterwards.
Maybe I did.
Yep.
That's much better. I think I inadvertently hit it with my finger as I was putting it on my belt. You may remember yesterday, Brother Tommy was talking about the two-horned beast and Charlemagne coming to defend the papacy. And we looked at a slide that had an eagle associating Charlemagne with the figure of Rome. It only had one head, you'll remember, but it had the outspread wings signifying the scope of the conquests and the spread of the Roman power. So here we see it very clearly associated with Rome, even with Charlemagne in the two-horned beast phase. Once again, as we see these things in the various statues that have been erected, we see it recorded in history. We know that God is orchestrating his plan. He is, every detail, he is working out. And so when we consider the apocalypse, and I think we, and the reason we started with the comments we did relative to the apocalypse, and the fact that the continuous historical interpretation is the correct interpretation, is because it aligns with all the prophets. We see it particularly as we've talked about the trumpet periods, for example, how it aligns with Daniel. I'd like to turn to the 11th chapter of Daniel. And there is a lot of history in the 11th chapter of Daniel. We don't have time this morning to touch upon the changes in power and the events that transpire to bring us to the latter day King of the North. But it all began, as we've considered here, in Daniel 8, you know, with the rise of the Persians to power, defeating Babylon, and of course, Alexander the Great and the Grecian conquests, the four horn powers, and then the single horn Rome that comes out of that, and ultimately grows into both Eastern and Western Rome. And we see that in these, and we'll see this very clearly in these last days, manifested in Russia, the Gogian host, representative of the political, military, civil aspect, and of course the Western portion, the ecclesiastical aspect, manifested in the papacy. So it's an exciting time that we live in, and we should be greatly encouraged by the things that we see transpiring on the world stage, and be thrilled that we are able to see these things take place, and should be encouraged in our faith. Well, here in the 11th chapter, and I would like you to follow along with me and bear with me. I want to read through some of this. And as I said, we can actually go back in history and pinpoint exactly who these individuals were that came to power at the various points in the development of the empire. And I wish we had time to do that this morning. But let's pick up at verse 1. And we'll see its similarities to chapter 8. Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. And we know that Cyrus was a very strong and powerful king of Persia. We know that they put the Greeks to through extreme persecution. And as a result, Alexander rose to power and, frankly, had decided they had had enough. And this is where we begin to see the advancements of Alexander against the Persians and ultimately destroying them, stamping them into the ground, as the scriptures tell us. And a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And indeed, this is Alexander the Great. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those. And those are the four kingdoms that came up. And we mentioned Cassander, Lysimachus, Antigonus, also Ptolemy, and Seleucus. And the king of the south shall be strong, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. And this is Ptolemy. And in the end of years they shall join themselves together, for the king's daughter of the south shall come to the king of the north to make an agreement. And she shall not retain the power of the arm, neither shall stand, but she shall not retain the power of the arm, neither shall he stand nor his arm, but she shall be given up, and they that brought her, and he that begat her, and he that strengthened her in these times. And we'll find that... lost one of my papers here. We'll find that there were many alliances that were made during this time frame. And we see that Cleopatra, not the Cleopatra that we think of, was actually wed to the king of the south to make an alliance. But rather than supporting her father, she supported her husband. And so there was a lot of these things that transpired. Again, I won't, beyond that, I won't say a whole lot about it. But as you go back and consider the history, look at these actual events and these personages that existed that are reflected in these specific verses. H.P. Mansfield does a superb job of dealing with this in the exposition of Daniel. So you might want to go back and read at least chapters 8 and chapter 11 as well. And in his estate stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come and peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him and be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. And after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. He shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the province, and he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He shall scatter among them the prey and spoil and riches. Yea, and he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds even for a time. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army. And the king of the south shall be stirred up to the battle with a very great and mighty army. But he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. So here we're introduced to the king of the south, which was originally the Ptolemaic kingdom. And then the king of the north, which was the Seleucid. The Seleucid, we remember, will become the little horn of the goat. And ultimately... Russia will control that territory that was the territory of Seleucid, or Seleucus the general. Then shall he return into his land, verse 27, and both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table, but it shall not prosper, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the Holy Covenant, and he shall do exploits and return to his own land. And as we said, where is Israel? Right between the king of the south and the king of the north. And we will see Israel once again between the king of the south and the king of the north, except they have a different identity in these last days, and we're going to talk about that in some detail. At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former or as the latter. For the ships of Chittim shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the Holy Covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant. And arms shall stand up on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength and shall take away the daily sacrifice. And they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil many days. And when they shall fall, they shall be hoping with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. So even the true believer, you know, during this transitional phase and rise to power of the northern kingdom, many would die. And as a result, you know, they were subjected to those experiences that they might be tried. I'd like you to follow along in verses 36 through 39, and I'm going to actually read Brother Thomas's translation of that and see how it compares. He has a different slant on some of these verses, and I think very appropriately so. And the king, picking up verse 36, and the king shall work according to his pleasure, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself against every mighty one. And he shall utter marvelous things concerning the mightiest of the mighty, and he shall cause to prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. But to the gods of his predecessors he shall give no heed, nor to the delight of women, nor to any god shall he attend, for he shall become great above all. But he shall do honor to a god of guardians in his realm, even to a god whom his predecessors knew not, shall he do honor with gold and silver and with costly gems and precious things. Thus shall he do to the bazaars of the guardians pertaining to a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and exalt with riches, and shall cause them to rule over many, and he shall divide the land for a price. So evidently the king in Constantinople supports strange gods which were not worshipped by his forefathers or predecessors. It refers to the adoption of apostate Christianity with all its wealth and its mysteries as the state religion of the whole Roman Empire. The czars of guardians, it seems like a very appropriate description for all the churches dedicate themselves to those who have long been dead, and more often than not, fictitious characters whom they claim to be alive and guarding them. The emperors of Constantinople and their successors, the czars, supported the church, and both parties drew strength from their mutual support. And we see, even today, how the Roman Church and the Greek Orthodox, or the Orthodox churches, the Russian Orthodox, are coming back together. It's interesting, back in, and I didn't share this when we were talking about the trumpet periods, but in 1054, relations between Greek-speaking Eastern and Latin-speaking Western traditions within the Christian church reached a terminal crisis. There was never a formal declaration of institutional separation, and the so-called Great Schism actually was the culmination of centuries of gradual separation. From this split, the modern Roman Catholic and the Eastern Orthodox churches arose, and we know they are very rapidly coming back together. We're seeing a lot of acquiescence on the part of the papacy. We know that Kirill has, who's head of the Greek or the Russian Orthodox Church, has made overtures, and as a matter of fact, the Vatican just recently published one of his works. So we can see that that chasm is starting to narrow, and eventually they will indeed be one, and we will see Rome fully manifested in its ecclesiastical and political aspects in Russia and the Russian host and the papacy, or the beast, the dragon, and the papacy, as Brother Tommy alluded to yesterday. These verses, particularly verses 36 through 39, lead us to the time of the end. With the ending verses of Daniel 11 describing the events that will occur between the latter-day kings of the north and the south. While verse 40 speaks of the confrontation between the British, who were in Egypt at the time, and were allied with the Australians and also with New Zealand, we know that there is a reference here to this time frame when the Turks were ultimately pushed back out of the area of the Levant. And this thus began the drying up of the Euphratian power that we read of in Revelation 16:12. We've considered this morning the rise of the Euphratian power, manifested lastly in the Ottoman Turks, and still existent today, in as much as Turkey is ruled, of course, by the Turks, and the religion would be what in Turkey?
Islam,
exactly. Now, look at, we're familiar with this, but look at Revelation 16. And we spent quite a bit of time here yesterday. Revelation 16, and note verse 12. And the sixth angel poured out his vial. And again, as we consider the historical interpretation of the apocalypse, we see how all of this is in succession. History from AD 96 up through and into the establishment of the kingdom of God. Very specific and very accurate. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates. And we know that the river here is a representation, you know, of the Arab power, particularly the Turks. And we read, and the water thereof was dried up. For what purpose? That the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I agree wholeheartedly with Brother Thomas that we're speaking of those kings out of a sun's rising or the redeemed. It is in preparation for the manifestation of the redeemed. And certainly, brothers and sisters, that's why we're here. And young people, these are truths that are revealed explicitly and clearly in the Word of God. It was not, we know, the what transpired with Britain and Turkey during World War I, but we know that it was not World War I, World War II. It was not the final conflict, but rather a milestone, if you will, in Israel's restoration of the land before Christ's return. The Turkish Empire incorporated the territory that at one time had been that of the Seleucid Kingdom of the North, which we've already alluded to. And the Turkish power is still drying up. And while yet it is quite, even now, significant and a powerful entity, it will very soon be completely dried up. Turkey must be conquered, and that will soon occur when Russia occupies what is the old Seleucid Empire. So they will take Turkey. And we know that, of course, this is very clearly prophesied. It will be necessary for them to inhabit Turkey, to rule in Constantinople, to be classified as the little horn of the goat, the king of the north. Russia desires to dominate, reflected in such things as the cross that's found in some Russian Orthodox churches. You'll notice that the cross is over a crescent. And the crescent is symbolic of the Islamic power. And so the cross over the crescent denotes that Christianity ultimately conquers the Islamic power. The king of the north, Russia, moves south. Turkey will fall victim to it. And perhaps even prior to the actual move, we'll see them move into Turkey. It's been interesting to watch the relationship that's been developing between Turkey and Russia, because it's been quite amicable. And they've signed some agreements to work in concert. And we've actually seen Turkey siding more with Russia and the Russian allies and the surrounding neighbors as opposed to the West. I'm sure Turkey is very cognizant of the fact that Russia could do pretty much what they want to do in the area. And so there's always a tie maintained with the U.S. Erdogan, who is their minister, is not exactly pro-West, as I'm sure you've noticed in some of the exchanges. But we will see that Turkey will ultimately fall victim to Russia. With Russia's residence in Istanbul, Constantinople of old, the great river Euphrates will be all dried up. At that time, the little horn of the goat, or Russia, will once again control the Middle East from that stronghold. So once again, it has nothing to do with races, as we clearly stated, and as Brother Thomas makes very clear in his writings, but rather it is the territory that we're speaking of. And I'm sure that Brother Mac tomorrow will take us deeper into that subject as we look at various land areas in relation to the consolidation of Europe and the things that are transpiring now. We see the strength of Germany, the advancement of Germany, which is really hard to believe if it was not divine intervention and deity at work, that after the destruction, I was just recently, Sandra and I were watching the fall of the Third Reich. Some of you may have seen that on public radio. You can't see it on public radio. You can listen to it on public radio. But you'll note that the destruction was just horrendous. I mean, it was amazing. And yet, we have seen that rise to power. And it demonstrates to us that the hand of God can accomplish whatsoever he wills. Russia now has become truly the leading power in Western Europe. And I'm sure you're probably going to talk about that some. We see the role, of course, that France is playing in that overall scheme of things, the detente that characterizes France. They're the ultimate ambassadors, if you will. Brother Daryl Pye had recommended a book to me, which I would recommend to you. It's called The U.S.'s Oldest Enemy, and it's all about France and how France has manipulated things throughout the history of the U.S. to advance their own cause, always concerned about their well-being. Brother Tommy talked about how France has been very concerned, or actually, that was Brother Tommy, you talked about the anti-Semitism, I think, that and Sarkozy's position relative to that. He has been very emphatic against it, when in actuality we know that really hasn't been the case, has it? Western countries, specifically the U.S. and Britain and the Western allies, are the king of the South power. Now, we know that at this point in time, we don't have Britain actually inhabiting Egypt, but the influence that the West holds in those areas is quite significant. And it's not inappropriate for us to see the latter-day King of the South as these Western powers. We can see the influence. You know, look at all the surrounding areas. These are all American or British bases. There's quite a concentration there, very involved as the King of the South, because they are involved in those territories. Have nothing to do with the Ptolemies, who were the original King of the South, but they will be involved in those land areas. Directly participative in the Middle East with military presence as well as diplomatic involvement. Let's look at Ezekiel, the 38th chapter. Ezekiel 38 and verse 13. And we're familiar with these. Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish, with all the young lions thereof, shall say unto them, Art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil? So as the king of the north moves down into the land, into Egypt first and comes back, we know that the king of the south is going to ask this question. Isn't it interesting what we've seen develop in the economy of the U.S., as well as all of the Western countries, because they're so closely allied with the U.S., the impact on the economy and how these very events may affect the ability of the West to contend with the King of the North, which we believe is going to happen and develop here very, very quickly. It's interesting that the southern Ptolemies occupied Cyprus, where Britain has a major military base. And I'd like to read another excerpt here from 2010 Milestones. And if you haven't read 2010 Milestones, you really should. It's, of course, produced by Don Pierce, but it's very much right on target. World War One is correct. At the time of the pushing in World War One, Britain occupied Egypt. She no longer does. However, both Britain and America have huge investments in Egypt. Egypt, the first to make peace with Israel, was to prove to be a treacherous friend, aiding the Palestinians against Israel. However, with the passage of time and reinforced with the threat from Iran, Egypt's attitude toward to Israel has greatly changed. And we've seen how these very Western powers that are allied with the U.S., Saudi Arabia, they've become quite concerned about what's going on in Iran, and rightly so. And so we've seen them move closer to the West as a result of it. Egypt as well. And we've seen just tremendous turmoil in the Middle East. We know that Mubarak was pushed out of Egypt and is about to be tried, although his health is very poor. So all of that spirit of rebellion, which was talked about in liberty, equality, fraternity, has found its way into the Middle East, and it's going to be quite an impetus as we move forward to the confrontation between the King of the North and the King of the South. The Suez Canal, is that a significant and critical point in geographically for all countries, really? It's a vital transportation link for Britain and America to deploy their troops in the region. It is a great revenue earner for Egypt. There have been several terrorist attacks, which we know have taken place against the canal, that have been thwarted with Israel's help in recent years. Isn't it interesting how often the nation of Israel intervenes in these confrontations? The situation may well arise when Britain is asked to help defend the zone from attacks. And we know ultimately Israel will be conquered by the King of the North, or the Northern Host, And it will demand the intervention of Christ and the saints. If the canal were to be blocked by sunken vessels, this would be very serious, not only to Egypt, but also Britain and America's ties with the region and India. The details given in the closing verses of Daniel 11 indicate that the king of the north comes down into Egypt and takes it. So clearly, Egypt is, up to then, in the opposing camp. And as we see what's going on in the Middle East with many of these countries, Egypt, what's taking place, and probably about to take place in Jordan even, but what's happened in Libya and other places, we shouldn't think, like in the case of Libya, for example, that there's going to be true freedom, because it's clear from Ezekiel 38 that Libya is allied and aligned with whom? King of the North, Gog. And so we need only look at Scripture to see where ultimately these things are going to go. What is not in doubt is the important influence that both Britain and America have in the whole region of the Arabian Peninsula today. So even with what's happened to the West, this is still the case. At the time of this pushing, and if you'll turn to Daniel 11:40 with me. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And the color's not great on this, but you can see the king of the north here, the king of the south. And isn't it interesting that it speaks of the king of the north coming with many ships? The description here, with chariots, with a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen. Daniel is very clearly explaining the military prowess that characterizes this entity or this power, but with many ships. There was a point in time when the Russian Navy was pretty much defunct. But what we've seen since Putin has come to power, and lastly Medvedev, who is basically a puppet for Putin, I think, we have seen the rise of their naval significance, and they've built new ships. They've done just a masterful job of enhancing the strength and power of their navy. And it's just interesting that here in verse 40, we have that emphasized. Even more reason for them to want to control Turkey and the Bosphorus. So this verse 40 speaks of the king of the south pushing at the king of the north. And while this does allude to the pushing of Britain, who was the king of the south at this time in World War I, against Turkey, it will happen again as we approach the return of Christ. America and Britain, the king of the south, the latter-day king of the south, will push and do so, and even now are doing so to a degree. You know, we see that influence being exercised. You know, the world was waiting for Mr. Obama to come out and give the U.S.'s position relative to what was transpiring in Egypt, what's gone on in Libya. And you know, there's been a real reluctance to commit oneself. But ultimately, you know, they have had to do some pushing, that is the West. Note, let me go back for just a moment. So we see the king of the south pushing and doing so now to a degree at the developing Gogian powers, delineated clearly in Ezekiel 38, Iraq, Iran, Persia, and so forth. Note the mention in this verse 40 of the artillery and the weaponry, and as we said, the navy. Russia has been very diligent in maintaining their naval bases. We know that particularly they were wanting to ensure that they were able to sustain the lease in Sevastopol, which is in the Ukraine, actually. And they were able to do so, and they did it by trading gas for the use of the port. We know that Russia will contend with Turkey over access to the Mediterranean, and this is why we're going to see, I believe, the move down into to Turkey, which could happen at any time. And indeed, we may be called to the judgment seat before any of those things transpire. So we don't want to sit around and wait and say, well, they've got to go into Turkey before we're called to the judgment, because that's not necessarily the case. Look at Daniel 11:41 with me, please. Daniel 11:41. And notice the end of verse 40. It says, "And he shall flow, or excuse me, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." And this is exactly what we see the king of the north do in these latter days. "He shall enter also into the glorious land." And who's being spoken of there? Into the glorious land.
Israel.
Exactly. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. So it clearly tells us that these entities will escape out of his hand. And typically, we're talking about the area of Jordan. Edom, Moab, and Ammon, which is Jordan. And they, of course, are leagued with the U.S. and Britain as part of the King of the South. It's a very precarious situation there right now. We know that King Hussein, the son of the late King Hussein, is married to a Palestinian, as a matter of fact. The King of the South will suffer defeat, and Egypt will succumb to the King of the North. And it speaks of the riches of Egypt. And the interesting thing is, look in verse 42. "He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape." And in verse 43, it speaks of the precious things of Egypt. And we might think that Egypt doesn't have much to offer. But interestingly, they have reopened a lot of the gold mines in Egypt, and they have found some tremendous finds. And so gold may well be a draw, but we know also gas and oil would be very inviting to the King of the North. The Suez Canal is another factor, strategically critical, a paramount positive factor to the entity that controls it. We read in verse 43, "But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt," speaking of the King of the North, "and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps." And that's brought out in Ezekiel 38 as well. They will be allied with the King of the North. They are part of the Gogian host. Read in verse 44, "But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go to..." Excuse me, let me turn this light on. I might be able to see a little better. "But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, and utterly to make away many." Tidings out of the east and out of the north. The judgment is perhaps taking place in Sinai. And Christ's forces are mustering for military action. And this could be the tidings out of the east. And again, we can only speculate here because we don't know. The tidings, it mentions also tidings out of the north, which may well be the gathering of the western forces, or the King of the North preparing, or excuse me, the King of the South preparing for conflict. Look at verse 45. "And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him." I'd like to read that again, because we know that ultimately Christ and the saints are going to intervene, and the King of the North will be utterly destroyed. And Brother Mack is going to get into that, I'm sure, in some detail. And then Brother Scott is going to wrap up with what develops in this destruction of the king of the north. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. And so he will conquer and control Israel. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. It may be that for some time, some period of time, Gog is occupying the Holy Land. The state of Israel has basically been destroyed and in bondage, but not fully destroyed, because we know we will soon see at this point the intervention of Christ and the saints and the liberation of Israel. Nebuchadnezzar's image will be standing upright and ripe, a stone to strike it. Didn't show you, but this is a Sevastopol in the Ukraine, which Russia was pushing for. Our screen doesn't come over there. Here we see the kingdom of men, Christadelphian teaching since 1848. We see Nebuchadnezzar's image. We see the four beasts. Daniel 8, the development, you know, of the Grecian power, ultimately the power in the east. We see the fourfold division of Alexander's empire. We see the various phases of the beast system. All of this continuous historical. And if we go back and look closely at the history, there are details that we can't even imagine that are so explicit, that illustrate the truth of the Lord's revelation, that it's just overwhelming. It's astounding. And we see the development ultimately to Babylon the Great, Revelation 17. We see the dragon power and its various manifestations in its development, as well as the Western power throughout the history of God's plan. And ultimately, it will indeed stand, and we will see the striking of the image. And we're at that point where the image is ready to stand fully. And it does have to stand collectively. And this power, this kingdom of men, manifested specifically in the king of the north and the northern host, will be destroyed by Christ and the saints. Russia will indeed occupy the territory of the original king of the north. And Russia, in concert with her allies, the Gogian host and the papal power, as a cohort, you know, will be utterly destroyed. Yet he shall come to his end. The king of the north will not be destroyed by the Tarshish powers, the king of the south, but rather again by Christ and the saints. Christ responds to Israel's cries for deliverance. Look at Ezekiel 37:11. And it's very hard for me not to want to go to Ezekiel to talk about the king of the north, but I'm going to leave that for Brother Mac and Brother Scott. Ezekiel 37 and verse 11. And we read, "Then he said unto me, Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Behold, they say, our bones are dried and our hope is lost. We are cut off for our parts." And indeed, that has been the condition of Israel, and we have seen how there has been a shaking of these bones and a restoration that is in part taking place. And we know that even with this, and with the prowess that characterizes the small nation of Israel because of God's involvement with it, ultimately it will be conquered, and it will necessitate Christ and the saints delivering it. Divine vengeance is leveled against Gog. Look at Zechariah 14, verse 3. And we considered this yesterday. Zechariah 14, verse 3. Let's start actually at verse 2. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought the day of battle. And as we said, we see this portrayed in so many ways in Scripture, in so many types, such as Joshua 10, for example. Zion benefits from the Saviors. Let's look at Joel. Joel, the third chapter. And let's read verse 16. Joel 3:16. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength, children of Israel. Great fury of Gog, as we read of it in Daniel 11:44, is met with the fierce anger of Yahweh. Let's go to Zephaniah, the third chapter, in verse 8. Zephaniah 3 and verse 8. Therefore wait ye upon me, saith the Lord, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy, with my zeal, and the fire of his wrath will manifest itself against this king of the north. Let's look at Ezekiel 38. Verses 18 and 19. It shall come to pass at the same time when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord God, that my fury shall come up in my face. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel, that the political seed of the serpent, as we've read from these scriptures and many others that we considered yesterday, the political seed of the serpent is crushed. We could spend much time, obviously, in Ezekiel 38 and 39 concerning this final development and the ultimate overthrow of the king of the north, but we'll end our comments here. We see these nations soon to come together to contend with Christ and the saints. Brother Thomas writes, and again in the preface to Elpis Israel, the future movements of Russia are notable signs of the times because they are predicted in the scriptures of truth. The Russian autocracy in its plenitude and on the verge of dissolution is the image of Nebuchadnezzar standing upon the mountains of Israel, ready to be smitten by the stone. When Russia makes its grand move for the building up of its image empire, and we've seen Russia making that move for many years, then let the reader know that the end of all things, as at present constituted, is at hand. The long-expected but stealthy advent of the King of Israel will be on the eve of becoming a fact, and salvation will be to those who not only look for it, but have trimmed their lamps by believing the gospel of the kingdom unto the obedience of faith, and the perfection thereof in fruits, meat, or repentance. Thank you.